Hello, everyone, and welcome to another Wednesday Conversation. I'm Mike Kresnick, and I'm here with Pastors Bob Thune and Dusty White of Coram Deo Church and Pastor Chris Hemmelman of First City Church.
In Bellevue, Nebraska.
Every Wednesday, we sit down to talk about how the gospel of Jesus Christ connects to the questions and issues of everyday life. And today, we're talking about why there are only two sexes.
Topics of sex and gender are perennially popular on this podcast because they are perennially places where our culture is experiencing massive confusion and massive change. And so there's sort of a continual desire on our part to keep revisiting issues of sexuality and gender as we encounter them in cultural dialogue and help Christians think biblically on these issues. So this podcast is based on an article at the Public Discourse by John Scalco, who is a professor at St. John's Seminary and a PhD candidate in philosophy. And here's why it caught my eye and why we used it as a topic for the podcast, because it answers a question we've been asked in some past podcasts that we've done on issues of gender. I've received emails from thoughtful listeners who have asked, hey, what about people who are what you would call intersex individuals? So some of them are born with extra chromosomes, or they're born with both pairs of sex organs, or they're sort of outliers, right? There's a small percentage of people that just don't fit sort of the standard ways of differentiating male and female. So this article begins by asking this question: what differentiates human males from human females? Is it the number of sex chromosomes? Is it the possession of the appropriate sex organs? Is it the amount of testosterone or estrogen? The difficulty is that none of these standards always works. Some individuals are born with extra chromosomes. Some are born with both pairs of sex organs. Some females have higher testosterone levels than many men. And so the author's basically making the point, so all of those are category busters. All of those, you know, if we say, well, men have this chromosome and women have this chromosome, and then there's someone who has both chromosomes, that blows up the categories. And so he's saying that's a really good challenge to the question of, are there only two sexes? So he wants to refer the conversation to a different level. And this is where I think it could be fruitful for our reflection. He wants to say, yes, there are only two sexes, but the differentiating point is not what chromosomes do you have, what sexual organs do you have? He wants to go to a different way of defining the binary nature of human sexuality. So here's, before I get to that, let me just bring up the objection he's trying to answer. He's saying, biologically, intersex individuals do seem to exist, as do people with other non-binary sex conditions. Hermaphrodites have male and female sexual organs. Some individuals with male organs have double X chromosomes. Some genetically male individuals have incomplete female sexual organs. What non-arbitrary but universal standard can there possibly be for determining sex? Where can we go, if not to chromosomes, if not to sexual organs? Where is there a non-arbitrary universal standard that can say, this is how we determine sex? A really good question, I think, and one that since a listener asked me that question, I've been kind of thinking about it and perplexed by, what do we do with those outlying cases, which granted aren't 50% of the population, but these people are there, and they are category busters, and there are realities and situations we experience in within humanity that cause these questions. Here is John Scalco's suggestion. He's actually, I think, quoting someone else here. He says, hey, let's do a thought experiment. Let's say we go to Mars and we find some creatures. And the question we're trying to answer is, are these creatures sexed? Can we distinguish male and female within these creatures? How would we go about finding the answer to that question? We wouldn't do it by examining their psyches. We wouldn't do it by cutting them in pieces and looking for various parts. What we would do is we would try to find out how they reproduced and what was the role of the different organs of the individuals involved in reproduction. Thus, sex is a biological and teleological notion. Anything which is called sexual is called that because it has some relation to this process of reproduction and to these organs. So here's where John Scalco wants to take the conversation. When a species reproduces sexually, we recognize there must be two types in that species, male and female, based upon the roles they play in reproduction. If human beings had no ordering to reproduction, if we were asexual, not only would we not have a concept of gender, there would be no biological sex because there wouldn't be male and female. So he's saying the reason there are only two sexes is because what it means to be a sexed being is oriented toward reproduction. And in reproduction, you have to have a male and female. And even those names are just saying they're two counterparts that have to come together sexually in order for reproduction to occur. So those two, like, you, maleness and femaleness play off of each other because they only reproduce together. And so he says, going to the question of what about people with extra chromosomes or whatever, he says, defects occur in nature, but defects imply a norm from which they defect. A castrated man is still a male. A female with a mastectomy is still a female. The fact that one is born with ambiguous genitalia does not do away with one's true sex. That it is hard to identify someone as male or female does not mean one is neither. Okay, so he's saying there's not a third option. So for people who fall into these categories of maybe ambiguous genitalia, or it's hard to identify male and female, or they possess characteristics of both, that doesn't land in a third category. He's saying they're still distinct as either male or female. How we fundamentally distinguish male and female then is based upon the two biological roles in reproduction. A human individual that has the basic capacity to reproduce with the female is biologically and truly a male. A human individual that has the basic capacity to reproduce with a male is biologically and truly a female. Male and female are defined in reference to each other, which is why they are correlative terms. You guys, the author here is just doing some good philosophy work. He's trying to press us back to what's the core foundation of the difference between the sexes. And he's saying it comes down to reproduction and what role male and female play in reproduction. And that's why it's binary. That's why there can only be two sexes, is because whatever else falls in between those two categories doesn't negate the necessity of male and female for sexual reproduction.
Yeah. So to be clear, what the work he's doing here is, I don't know if Bob, if this be the right word, but somewhat reductionistic in the sense of like reducing maleness and femaleness to like its basic principle.
Yeah, its essence. Yes,
its essence. Okay, because there is a sense of, you know, the questions that come up about, you know, what is it like maleness in the sense of like personality and psyche and wiring and all that,
right?
And femaleness that are also in play here, but he's not concerning himself there. He's just trying to find that sort of baseline distinguishing mark that is a part of this.
Yes, correct.
Okay. Because I think that's helpful, because I could see where objections to this could come in the form of trying to, well, that's not, you know, men and women aren't just reduced to what it means to be a man, or what it means to be a woman isn't just reduced to my reproductive capacity. And it's, sure, it's more than that, but it's not less than that.
Right. And he's saying, yes, at its essence, it is that. Now, right, does that play out in all kinds of other different kinds of differences between us? Yes. But at its core, you know, this Martian example is helpful, I think. If we went to Mars and we're trying to figure out, does this species have gender? We'd be looking for how do they reproduce and who does what in the reproductive process. And like, that's how we solve that, right? Mm-hmm. And so it is the sort of core and most foundational aspect of the difference. But I don't think he would be reductionistic and say it's the only difference,
right,
but it's the essential one.
Yeah. So here's what's interesting to me. This is going to take it a little bit past what he's saying, but what's interesting to me is how he uses that term, that sense of like the teleological aspect of sex, like that there is male and femaleness have as their ends the ability to reproduce and create. It goes back to the creation mandate, it be fruitful and multiply. And so that you cannot separate male and femaleness from that. Now, not every male and every female are going to reproduce, but you're wired as a man, wired as a woman. Part of that wiring does have a purpose for reproduction that was from the beginning. And so what's interesting too, this kind of takes me back to that conversation we had several weeks ago when we debated the book about the purpose of sex.
Yes.
And sort of reduced it to, in some ways, not completely, said, you know, there are other aspects of sex, but sex and reproduction. And I was having a conversation with a dude I know who's a pastor. He's also a counselor. And I asked him that question because he does a lot of marriage counseling. And I go, so what do you think is the purpose of sex? And he talked about reproduction and unity. And I said, well, which is primary? And he goes, well, chicken and egg kind of thing. It's like that both of those two things, like our sexuality and the purpose of sex, like that's the teleological end of both of those things. And so I think even underneath a lot of what he's saying here is that our sexual hardwiring is male and female because it has that teleological end of reproduction. Like it's not neutral. It's not just kind of this freak of nature that makes it, I mean, if you look at the way God created male and female, like this is important. Like it's not just simple biology. Like there's a reason why you need male and female come together, reproduce, and that male and femaleness matters, not just to perpetuate the species, but also in raising a family and the identity with that. So that's what my brain just started like blowing up with this. So it kind of took us further than what he's saying, but.
Well, and he does get into the question of what he would call capacity or potency,
mm-hmm.
meaning he would say the beauty of the definition I'm giving here is it does not require you to be active in reproduction. It just means you have a male or female capacity or potency. Right.
Yeah.
And so and that's a classic philosophical term is just what are, you know, a capacity or a potency. You're, if in the right situation, you would be capable of reproducing. Now, you may not be married, you may not be in that kind of a situation, or your body may have physical capacities that are not functioning as they ought. But in the physically oriented being that you are. And he's saying that's true even for people who would be considered intersex individuals, they still are either male or female. Meaning if they have the capacity of reproducing with another woman, then that means they're male. If they have the capacity of reproducing with another male, that means they're female. In no case in anywhere in the human species do we have a female who's capable of reproducing with another female or a male who's capable of reproducing with another male. That's why sex is binary, and that's the clearest argument for it.
Yeah, yeah. I think this is great. I mean, I think he does some good work here, and it's on the biological end. I'd be curious to see how people argue against this. Like, how are you going to try to get it? Just because he's going, you know, bare bones essence, and you know, you can get into if. You can try to get into the, you know, how gender is culturally situated and all those other aspects, but that's not where he's going with this. It's like, you got to come to grips with the fact that biologically speaking, there's it's just binary and it's in your face, no matter how much you want to punch and kick against that.
Yeah. It is, you know, in a sense, it's sort of like interesting that we live at a time in history when someone has to write an article like this, because I think for most of history, this is just taken for granted. Like, well, obviously, but this is another reason for, why would we talk about this on a podcast? Because this is a persistent question in our culture, especially in all the conversations about sex and gender, is just, well, what about transgender people? What about if I don't feel like I'm a man and I wish I was a woman? And he's saying, well, that's all reality. No one's arguing with the fact that there can be psychological and soul level maladies that affect us, but we cannot get around the reality of our biology. And one of the reasons I think Christians need to be very prayerful and grieved about the sort of radical transgenderism is because it in many ways seeks to destroy those reproductive capacities. So the hormones that people take and the surgeries that they pursue when they're sort of radically pursuing a transgender identity destroy those reproductive capacities in an irreversible way. And so in a sense, they're acting against the biology that is given them. And that's something we need to see as serious rather than just going, well, I guess whatever people want to do is fine.
For Christians, it's interesting too how
this ties in our bodies to our spirituality. There's no distinction between, well, you know, I'm an eternal being, so I'm going to live forever. It's like, no, that's all tied in together. How we treat our bodies, how we view our bodies, how we think about our bodies matters, because our soul and our bodies are tied together. And that's just God making us in his image.
Yes. And unsurprisingly, this I take from this guy's PhD studies that he's a Catholic. Hmm. And so the Catholics, again, they do a really good job with embodiment. You know, and Protestants need to learn from this example and say, yeah, we have to recover a theological vision of the body that sees it not as arbitrary, but as essential to our being and to what it means to be made in the image of God.
So how does his argument help us pastorally dealing with someone who maybe feels that they're like psychologically, attractionally, like their gender doesn't fit their biology?
I think the simplest answer to that question for me, and I don't know that this article changed, I probably would have approached it this way anyway, but Christians, any Christian, because this isn't just a pastoral question, right? There's people that this is a life question in their families or in their friendships, right? All of us are in relationship with people who are going through various types of gender identity confusion. The simplest, the most baseline thing this causes us to need to do is to say, hey, I get all your psychological and social angst. Let's just go ahead and separate that from biology, right? So if I'm talking to someone who is biologically male and they're wrestling with, am I really supposed to be a man or was I supposed to be a woman? I want to approach that as a psychological and spiritual question, right? And a live question and a real question and a meaningful question. But say, hey, but however we process that question, the answer is not to change who you are biologically right now. The answer is let's work out where the questions are coming from, and let's try to figure out where we go to find some answers to those questions. Because where our culture wants to run more and more is that your psychology should determine your biology.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, and we want to be the opposite. We want to say, no, your biology matters and it's given to you for a reason. So let's bracket that and let's just, you know, here's who you are biologically. Now let's try to resolve and deal with the psychological and spiritual and emotional questions that maybe lie underneath that.
Yeah, that's good.
I think it really helps, because if you have sexual confusion, what people are looking for is some sort of baseline foundational truth. So if I'm confused, what's true? Mm-hmm. And so at the very least, at the very end of the day, amidst all confusion, God made you one of two ways. We can start there. Now, there's probably a lot of work to do. But there's a sense of security in that. There's a sense of rest in that and peace in that. It's probably totally disrupted. Yes. But let's at least start biologically.
Yep. So obviously the pastoral questions and the existential questions are multiplied from here, right? Because this could go into all kinds of questions about how do we relate to people who are experiencing gender confusion and all of that. That's all for another podcast. At the very least, what we want to do in this podcast is lay out this philosophy of binary sexuality that I think is appropriately grounded in biology as a helpful starting point for all those conversations. So it doesn't tell you, well, how do you have the conversation with this person or that person? But what I hope it does is give you a grounding point for a meaningful and biologically rooted sexual differentiation that then allows us to take into account people with, you know, chromosomal abnormalities or people that are intersex individuals, and allows us to walk with them in care and in honesty, but also not in ways that say, because that exists, therefore all questions of sexuality are up for grabs. We're saying, nope, that does not undo maleness and femaleness. It just presents some challenges and questions to what does it mean to walk that out in these cases. Here's an important piece of clarity that I think is just helpful in a culture that sort of wants to make everything about emotion and how you feel and how you sort of choose to identify. John Scalco says in this article, in human beings, when one has an extra chromosome or defective genitalia, you have just that, a sexual defect at the physical level. Such people are wonderful, loving, and morally upright persons, but physically something has gone wrong. which I think is clarifying to say that, to say, man, if someone has a chromosomal abnormality, that's great. Let's call that what it is, instead of allowing that to say, we need to now redefine everything we ever thought about sexuality or gender, which is what, this is how I think even there's a lack of love toward people who fall in that category in the culture, because instead of helping those people sort of understand their place in the world and how they should live out their sexuality, the sort of, some of the voices in the culture are grabbing those people and saying, this is what now means we should rethink everything we've ever thought about sexuality and gender. And I think it's very helpful, though somewhat humbling, to say, hey, there are people who have sexual defects at the physical level. That doesn't make them flawed or bad people. It just means in the physicality of their bodies, something has gone wrong, and that's okay. That doesn't mean we throw out every sexual distinction that we have. It means we treat those as unique cases rather than as category defining cases.
Yeah. And also not as an argument for whatever sexual rant you want to be on.
Yes.
And this raises the question for me too, of why we start with biology and issues like this. Like why don't we start with the psychology? Why is it that biology informs, how we process these things? And as you know, the Catholics have done really good work on the embodiment. And if you think of fundamentally what it means to be made in the image of God, male and female, this goes back to Genesis 1 and 2. There's a fundamental aspect to our biology to be made in the image of God, male and female. That's where it starts for us in our identity. So for us to start with the psychology is to bypass what God has established and what God has done in making us in his image, both male and female. So for us to start with biology, we're starting essentially where God started, Genesis 1 and 2, made in his image as male and female, and that sets and establishes our identity. It's not, there are other aspects to our identity, but that's fundamentally the core, the essence of who we are, made in the image of God, male and female. And so we can't bypass that. We can't jump to the psychology of that. We can't minimize and try to shift that around. Otherwise we're doing violence to the essence of what we're being. And I think that's what is so great about this article, is it's boiling right down to how do we identify that made in the image of God, male and female?
Even if gay men are welcoming children into the world, so let's say they figure out how to have a baby, there's a surrogate or something like that, going back a couple podcasts ago, or a lesbian couple has a baby or something like that. Chris, to your point on Genesis 1 and 2, the very first thing that happens at any hospital I've ever been at is a defining moment shows up, and it's either a boy or a girl. Nobody's born, and then the parents or the doctors or the nurses go, well, we'll see. There's certain bodily things present right away. And so it's just interesting that we have to keep going back to like basic fundamental biological realities to just reiterate the fact that God has made you this way. Mm-hmm. And let's work with that.
Well, to go back to something you said a few minutes ago, Dusty, truth is liberating and freeing.
Yeah.
And so part of, like, I think we live in such an emotivist culture that if you listen to a podcast like this and you have a friend who maybe is an intersex individual, or you know someone who has both male and female sex organs, and so that's a real existential struggle for them, you immediately start to go, well, what does it mean to love that person? And I think, well, let's embrace the reality that love means speaking the truth, right? Speaking the truth in love. And so truth is liberating. The truth of there being male and female allows a person like that to find their place within society and know how to live within it. And that is a blessing and a benefit to all of us. And so though this podcast is sort of philosophical in nature, we're trying to sort of boil down the essence of the distinction between male and female. What we're doing here is really the foundation of good pastoral work, which is, what is true? Let's start with the bedrock of what is true. Mm-hmm. And then let's take what we meet in the world and what we meet in the relationships around us and bring the truth to bear in ways that are helpful, liberating, freeing, encouraging, and ultimately ultimately healing and blessing to people. And that's, I think, what we're trying to do here is to say, here's a baseline philosophical truth that now helps us know how to relate to all kinds of questions and confusion related to sexuality and gender, and that's good.
Again, the article title was Why There Are Only Two Sexes by John Scalco. The link to that article will be in the show notes. The goal of this podcast is to equip our own church for discipleship and mission. So if you're a Christian or church leader in another context, we thank you for listening in. And we pray that the things that we've talked about might also be helpful to you as you minister in your own context. If you have topic suggestions or want to engage on this topic, shoot us an email, podcast@cdomaha.com. And feel free to give us a review on iTunes. We hope that you join us next week for another Wednesday conversation.